Hello, welcome to episode one of Theophilus Theologue. This is a theology podcast, and I am your host. I am also the star of this podcast. I am the speaker, the guest speaker, the interviewer, the interviewee. I am this podcast. Theophilus Theologue is me. And my name is Daniel Otto Jack Peterson. And I may tell you a bit more about myself as the podcast progresses. This podcast is being brought to you by popular demand. The people have asked for this podcast, and some have asked for it not to go ahead, and some have said maybe it should, and it's kind of a controversial thing from the get-go. I'm being facetious. One person asked me to do a podcast, and then I asked around if people thought that was a good idea, and some others said, sure, why not, let's give it a try. So I'm giving it a try. Now, for this first episode, I have a pretty simple little outline that should get us through pretty easily, I hope. And that is simply to, one, explain what the name of this podcast means, Theophilus Theologue. Which should be pretty short and simple. And then I want to talk about what theology is, or what I take it to be, what it could be. And within that, probably talking about my own background a little bit, which I think is important to do. I think we should tell our own stories whilst we theologize, whilst we talk about theology, because narration or narrative and theology go very well together. And in fact, historically, theology grows out of narrative. Story comes first, then theology grows out of that. When you think about the Hebrew scriptures, what Christians call the Old Testament and then the New Testament, that is one incredible epic story made up of a bunch of dramas and stories and other genres of literature within that, and it's the theology that actually grows out of those stories that create one big story. So what is this theology that grows out of story? Well, that's what we're going to talk about. But first, we'll talk about the name of this podcast, Theophilus Theologue. Theophilus means friend of God. Okay, just like the word philosophy is Philo and Sophia. That's philosophers in ancient times wanted to become friends of Sophia, friends of wisdom. Well, Theophilus means that one is a friend of God. Okay, we've got Theos, the Greek word for God, and Philo, the Greek word for friendship, love. I am not a Greek scholar. But I read the works of Greek scholars from time to time and kind of pick up on these things. So that's the Theophilus part, and that was the person addressed in the Gospel of Luke, one of the four canonical Gospels, the four Gospels that are in the New Testament, recognized by the Church throughout history as authoritative apostolic Gospels, meaning they were tied to the apostles, which were the people that Jesus appointed to be the first leaders of the church, and so on. Luke's gospel begins by addressing itself to this person called Theophilus, and he tells Theophilus what the idea is behind his gospel and why he's writing it, and that's largely where today we are still in touch with this name, Theophilus, friend of God. And I've named the podcast Theophilus Theologue, because theologue is a term I got from my father, who is, God rest his soul, has gone across the Great Divide a couple of years ago. He died, and but he was a pastor and a preacher. And what he always said about himself was that he was not a theologian, but a theologue. And what he took that to mean was a theologian is, if you will, kind of a master in all things theology, someone who has achieved a certain level of learning, understanding, ability to teach, and so on, whereas a theologue is a mere student, if you will, of theology, just, you know, the Padawan to the Jedi Master, to borrow cheesy popular culture analogies. Not, you know, Star Wars is fun. I like Star Wars, the original trilogy. Everything beyond that is dead to me. But so you've got theologues and theologians. That was a popular way my dad liked to put it, because he loved theology. See, this is where my narrative, my autobiography, my own story is naturally coming into trying to explain some things here. But my father was besotted, frankly, with theology. He just couldn't read enough theology and think about enough theology and eat it up and soak it up. And it was a huge part of his life. But he was not a trained theologian. He was what he called a theologue. Now, the difference between my father and I in this regard is that my father actually went to seminary and got a degree from there. Seminary is this strange term for a separate sort of college or university in which people learn about theology, about all things to do with what is often called divinity in academia, but all things theological and etc. And he did that because he was an ordained pastor, and part of the requirement of him becoming one was that he go to seminary. But he went to seminary to become a pastor, not to become a theologian. You kind of go on and on in your studies to get to the point of being a theologian, and he didn't do that, but he never lost his love for theology. So he called himself a theologue, and that's what I want to say that I am, although even less qualified than my own father. So that keeps us on a level of humility and provisionality. This is an exploration. This is an experiment. This is lay theology, if you like, the layman's, you know, attempt at theology. And I'll say why I think that's important too, that it not be just left to the theologians. So Theophilus, theologue, friend of God, student of God, student of all things to do with theology. So that's what we're doing here, Of course, I personally consider myself a Christian, someone who believes in Jesus Christ and follows Jesus Christ, a follower of Jesus, or a disciple, which is another student-type term, or apprentice-type term of I am a disciple of Jesus Christ. Okay, so that is why I would adopt the title Theophilus, that Christians believe that Christ has come into this world to make us friends of God, because our sin has put us in the terrible and terrifying and unfortunate place of being enemies of God. And I know that's just a horrific, unpopular idea to many people today. And I will, in a later podcast, should this go on to that extent, describe a little more what I mean by that. It's not that we are in a natural state of being enemies of God. I think we start as friends of God. I think that's what he created us for. But that becomes lost in the big story of planet Earth. Again, story and theology. And has to be restored. And God is a gracious and loving God who wants to restore that friendship. And I'm not claiming I'm a friend of God because I'm such a good friend to him. I'm his pal. He needs me. You know, we do favors for each other, etc. I'm saying I think God has kindly made me his friend through things that he's done for me to make that right in Christ. And that's why I would presume to call myself a friend of God, because he's just been really nice to me and made me his friend. And sorry that this is becoming a bit preachy here, but I'll say something about preaching and theology in a moment as well. But I'm just trying to share where I'm coming from and why I use this term Theophilus, friend of God. I do believe that God is not just for a few, you know, his select friends, I'm part of his inner circle or something, but that his embrace is worldwide, and he desires to make all people his friend. All who are listening to this, he would desire to make you his friend. So that's where I'm coming from with that. So it's not meant to sound presumptuous or exclusive. But we can talk about that perhaps more in upcoming podcasts. So Theophilus Theologue, there you go. That's the title. Let's move on and talk about what theology is. Okay, so theology, again, we have this word theos. The other side of that word is logos. Famously in John's gospel, he begins it by talking about the word, which in the Greek is the logos. In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God, and all things that have been made were made through this word. And then some verses down in his opening chapter there, he says this insane, amazing statement that the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And of course, he's talking about Jesus Christ. That's the incarnation of this word, this logos, who is God and who created all things, who is with God. So the logos, the word, and that's famously where we get our term logos, or one of the most famous uses of it. If you study ancient philosophy, you'll also see it a whole bunch in there. And it was there, it was around as a concept and a term before John wrote his gospel. And I think he's intentionally borrowing from it to a certain degree. So logos, and that is a term for word, as we've just seen, but discourse, talking, ideas, concepts, these sorts of things. So you've got theos and logos, and obviously, again, what we have here is a discourse about God, talking about God, words about God, and indeed thinking about God. Logos, you know, is connected to the word logic as well. So it's thinking and reasoning about God. Okay, so it has similarities, I think, to philosophy in that way, in terms of its project, its aims, some of its methods, and so forth. There's, you know, theologians and thinkers and philosophers have got lots of views about theology and philosophy and how they go together or don't go together. They're in complete conflict and don't have anything to do with each other, and both Christians and non-Christians say that kind of thing. And then others who think they're best friends and they work together, or they're co-equal partners, or there's one partner that's bigger in that relationship, or, you know, all these sorts of things. But I'm just saying that in the same way that the ancient philosophers said, I want to be a friend of Sophia, a friend of wisdom. I want to know, you know, I want to be wise, you know. Well, in the same way, theologians, theologues, theology is about saying, I want to know about God. I want to speak some kind of sense about God. I want to explore that, reason about that. Who is God? What is God? How can we, you know, make sense of that? Now, is mysterious as wisdom is, and knowledge, and what the philosophers have been after for all the ages up to today, how mysterious and elusive that is, and it's, you know, many philosophers would go into a philosophy of despair and just say, you know, you can't find out wisdom, and you can't have any knowledge. It's, we've tried, and it's a project that fails. And indeed, Job, the book of Job in the Old Testament, prefigures such thoughts in saying that. I can't remember if it's maybe Job chapter 28, I don't know for sure, but that talks about wisdom being elusive and you can't find it out. And in fact, another philosophical book from the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes, similarly says things like that. So, you know, here's what I'm saying. As elusive as wisdom is, and philosophers wanting to be friends of something so elusive, well, when we come to the concept of God and wanting to speak intelligently about God and reason about God, do a logos about the theos, we're possibly in even more elusive territory, because it's inherent in the whole idea of any kind of, and this comes out of theology, but I'm jumping ahead, you know, and just saying, look, here's theology has shown us about God. If you just start to try to think clearly about this whole concept of God, well, you're talking about something, a reality. I'm just saying conceptually. I know a lot of people don't even accept that this theos, this God, is a reality, but you can conceive of this God. And you're talking about a reality that is completely transcendent, is a word that's used a lot. Just totally above us and beyond us. And it is a concept, a person, a reality that is infinite and here we are finite. Okay, so what? You know, it's almost silly to sit there and even think we can do theology, have a logos about the theos, have words about God, because you're trying to talk about the unspeakable. You're trying to capture the ultimate wildness that cannot be captured or tamed or talked about, okay? Why would we then go ahead and do such a thing? Well, because on the Christian understanding, now maybe on other understandings that aren't Christian, maybe theology is just something you can go, oh, that was a cute thought, theology, never mind, can't do it. But on the Christian understanding, the reason we would dare to do this silly, admittedly kind of funny and farcical and slapstick sort of discipline and project called theology is because God spoke to us first. God began a dialogue with us. God engaged us in conversation. As insane as that sounds, but that, I'm just saying, that's the Christian story. That's the idea. That's the Hebraic Judeo-Christian idea that comes from the book, the first book of the Bible, Genesis onward, is God, first of all, creates us, and then he creates us in his, not then as in a sequence, I'm just saying another aspect of the fact that he creates us is that he creates us in his own image. That's the language of Genesis. God creates male and female, men and women, humankind in his own image. So already you've got this freaky thing going on, this transcendent, unknowable God making creatures to look like him somehow, to be like him, who is essentially, again, if you think clearly about the idea of God, you're going to find that he's incomparable, incomparable, and yet he says we compare to him, and so you get into paradox and these sorts of things, and that's inherent. It's going to happen in theology. Some people think that's a weakness. I do not think so. I think that's a strength. I think that's even oftentimes a sign of the truth of things, because real truth is complex and, sorry, I was thinking irreducibly complex, but then, oh, we get into controversial, you know, evolutionary biology issues and stuff, and that's not really what I'm referencing there, but it's just, there's an irreducibly complex element to just thinking about God, or about truth, most truths. In fact, C.S. Lewis mentions this in Mere Christianity, that real things, true things, tend to have a queer twist about them. There's going to be something weird about it. And if there's not, then you're probably not really looking at truth. You're looking at some kind of, you know, man-made, constructed, you know, pat, little packaged thing that we can wrap our heads around, and it's been reduced to something not true because it's too easy, too digestible. So the fact that we get into paradoxes and so forth about God when we think about him is, for me, at least potentially a sign of that we're talking about truth. Okay, so God makes us in his own image, so we're like God. So that's, theology already has begun at that point. I mean, or the possibility of theology is in place. Wait a minute, you know, maybe we can talk about God if we're like God. Okay, so that's number one. But number two, God directly speaks to us, addresses us, and says, hey, you there, human, Adam, the person of the earth, earthling, and Eve, mother of all living, as it says in Genesis, you know, you people, I am addressing you, and I've got some stuff to say to you. He blesses us and says, introduces himself to us as a giver from the get-go, which is awesome, because there's an awe and a respect in that, because that means there's implied in there is lordship, that he is king, that he is ruler, that he is master, because he's giving. We are the receivers, he is the giver, and everything we are and have is from him, so we're like in his hands, as the children's song says, and that's intense, and like, whoa, he's the giver. But it also speaks of the nature of this Lord, that he is generous, that he is a generous Lord who gives, and so on. And he addresses us, okay, and he starts talking to us, and then he requires, even one of the things he communicates to us in the Bible is then that we are to respond. Oh, response. I call out to you and you respond. Bang! Theology. Okay, so it's from the Christian perspective, theology is actually built into creation. It's just what we do. As funny as it is to do it, to sit here and try to talk about God, to say finite words about the infinite one. Ha ha, how silly. This stand-up night, you know, let's do some theology. As silly and funny as that is, it's actually built into creation. And we're called to do it. And it's natural. And that's a very interesting thing about theology. This is something I say about both philosophy and theology, because philosophy can seem very abstract, very abstruse, very pointless and pointlessly complex. It can look absurd to onlookers. And I, having tried to read some, you know, fairly high-level philosophy for more than a decade now, and now studying it part-time at university, I am a great lover of philosophy, and I am rather addicted to it, and I'm naturally that sort of person who's built to kind of think that way. I'm wired that way, just as some people are wired for more mechanical, hands-on things or different kind areas of thought, like science. So I'm not wired for, you know, technical science stuff, etc. I'm wired for philosophy, okay, and I love it, and I've read it. I feel that way about philosophy a lot, and about philosophers, and about philosophical systems. I'm just like, what is this nonsense? You're overcomplicating it. You know, I know my hand's real. I don't have to prove it, you know, or whatever philosophers sit there and think about. And I'm not just mocking it. There is some good points in thinking deeply about the things that they think about. But I'm just saying it can be frustrating, and we can think it's at best optional, and at worst a total waste of time. It's for charlatans and so on, okay? But that's not really true, because when you understand what philosophy is, just trying to think clearly about things, to actually reason well about life in a big picture way, as well as details about what's good, for example, here's what we find. If you really think it through, everyone is a philosopher. Everyone philosophizes. So what you really end up with is whether you philosophize well or poorly. Okay, so, and that's what I say about philosophy, and I would say even more so that is the case with theology, and a number of theologians have said this, that everyone is a theologian. Everyone is. Because everyone thinks about God. Everyone has a concept of God and ideas about God, what God is or isn't, including God's existence, whether God exists or not. And everyone in that sense is doing theology. And again, it's a question, are you doing theology well or poorly? So everyone is a theologian. And I recall the philosopher Alvin Plantinga, who does a lot of stuff in philosophy of religion as well as other areas, particularly epistemology, which is the theory of knowledge or how we know things. I remember him calling atheist philosophers and so on atheologians, and they were doing atheology. And I think that's exactly right. When you hear the word theologian or theology, two of the main groups you should think of who do the most overt theologizing in public are Christians or religious people, theists of some sort, and atheists. Atheists are theologians. They have a lot of ideas about what or who God is, and reasons why such a concept is chimerical, not real, or such a person does not exist. But they have to think about that a lot, and they've got ideas and concepts about God. So, you know, when I say everyone is a theologian, I mean everyone, even atheists. You know, everybody thinks about God and makes a decision about God and says this or that, the other, including ignoring the concept of God. You're ignoring a real idea that you have in your mind and not thinking about it, but it's there. And part of your decision about that concept is to ignore it. So even there's even baseline theology going on there as well. So it's natural, and from the Christian perspective, it's built in. One philosopher, I believe, disparagingly called humans the God-intoxicated ape. I believe that was, I want to say, Walter Kaufman, if I'm even saying the name correctly. He I believe has been quoted as saying that, and I think that's, if we want to be humble and humorous about it, I think that's great. Sure, why not? Let's call us that. We're God-intoxicated apes. And I think even someone like Richard Dawkins in his book, The God Delusion, which is the only full-length book by him that I've read, would acknowledge something like that. He seems to acknowledge that we're addicted to God. We just have this God thing in us. And for him, it's annoying. For him, it's explainable by biology, and things we need to believe for survival, and it's something we need to get past to further evolve and so on. We're deeply rooted in this whole concept of God as human beings. It's part of being human. You just kind of do that. It's a signal that you are human, that you think about God. So that's why we would bother doing this funny thing called theology. And I call it funny. I learned that concept from a theologian I really like called Thomas C. Oden. Who's written a number of theological works, and including a three-part systematic theology. And he has a postscript to that systematic theology called On Theocomic Perception. And there he talks about the idea of theocomedy, which actually he talks about in the very beginning as well. And again, that's just this whole idea that it's funny and silly that we're finite beings trying to talk about an infinite God, and that we have to remember that. That it seems to be built into us. It's, if we believe in the Christian revelation, it's required of us. And yet it's kind of funny. And so we have to have a sense of humor. And that helps us actually find truth when you have a sense of humor about it. Because you remember that anything we are going to find out about God is going to come from God, not us, ultimately. And that everything we believe and understand about God, we have to believe and understand humbly, with a willingness to learn, because it's funny, it's silly that we're even trying to do it, and yet it's required of us. So the more we laugh at ourselves, the more we can go, okay, I can learn something here, as long as I remember that there's a comedy to this. This is comic that we're doing this, and if it weren't for God's grace, for him graciously reaching down to us and speaking to us, we couldn't know anything about him. So as long as I keep that in mind, maybe I can learn a thing or two. Maybe I can understand, this revelation that he's given me, but I have to be teachable. And it helps us not, fight each other over theology, because that's what theology means for a lot of people. It's like, this is the fight for faith. This is the fight for the right doctrine and so forth. When in fact, it can have those elements. I'm not saying it's never right to fight for something that you believe in and that's good. But first of all, there are right and wrong ways to fight. there are loving ways to carry on a conflict, a debate, an argument. But there's times to get angry and stand firm and all these things. I'm not saying that never has a place. I think anyone in the whole world knows there's a time and place for that. In politics and daily living and, defending people against oppressors or whatever it may be. But at the same time, I don't think theology necessarily has to be primarily about fighting that, that fight to keep doctrine pure or something like that. I think what my natural engagement with theology has always been, first and foremost, a sense of awe and wonder at what I'm contemplating, and a sense of exploration. I mean, I literally feel like an astronaut out in the depths of space between the stars, traveling and navigating when I do theology, when I read it and think about it, and indeed pray about it. It's a wondrous thing. There is exploration going on here. I feel humbled, I feel small, and I feel in need of guidance. And I think that should be our impulse when we do theology. So I think that is probably long enough for one episode. It's longer than I planned, but we will stop here. This has been episode 1 of Theophilus Theologue, a podcast about theology, being hosted by your pal, Daniel Otto Jack Peterson. That's me. Let me know what you think so that we can decide if we're going to go on with this. Blessings to you. Thank you for listening.